The following program contains the opinions of the host, guests, and call-in participants. These do not necessarily represent the views of this show's distributors or sponsors. This program may contain obscene, profane, or otherwise objectionable language. Viewer discretion is advised. Ah, yes, coming to your cordless, everybody. It's 1 minute after 11 p.m. Coast of the United States. 1 minute after 8 p.m. I'm never going to nail this ever. Who are we kidding? I'm Biden. I'm an elderly old man with memory problems. It's 1 minute after 8 p.m. on the west coast of the United States. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon in Sydney, Australia, and here in Northeast Minneapolis, it's 1 minute after 10 p.m. Central Time. I am Jim Peters, and you are watching Jim Peters at Night. This is show number 83. It's Monday, February 12, 2024. I had to stop and think about that. So, how you doing? Yeah, you recovered from the big game last night? You know, okay, so, first of all, they've taken surveys, they ask people, should the Monday after Super Bowl Sunday be a holiday? Overwhelmingly, no. You know why? It's trivial. That's why. So, you know, I had my money on the Chiefs. I got to admit, for the most of the game, I thought I was going to lose. But, yeah, they pulled through. Why did I pick the Chiefs, even though they were the underdogs? 49ers had the line. Very simple. The 49ers, first time they've been in a Super Bowl in 31 years. Chiefs have been there 5 of the last 6. They know how to do it. It's kind of like being president, and there's no substitute for actually doing it. You don't know what it's like until you actually do it. You get to the big name game, you're all discombobulated. But actually, the 49ers played really well. And the people complained about Tony Romo at the end. It's like, God, give me a break. First of all, and you know, I was a diehard football aficionado in my youth. I played. I was pretty good. Yeah, I know everybody says that, but I really was. And so at the last play, I'm dying to know how they did it. Because what's his name? Harden? He's wide open. Wide open. It's like, you know, first of all, the entire season's on the line, and you wouldn't think a guy would be that open, you know, when people are concentrating that hard. And Romo explained how they did it, and I appreciate that. Apparently, a lot of people didn't. They just wanted to bask in the moment. They wanted to bask in their Taylor Swift moment. Fuck you. That's what I have to say. You know, it's, I want to know how the fuck they did it. So, anyway, that's me. What do I know? I don't got anything going on except this. All right, so let me tell you what we got going on here. First of all, we got a big week planned. Big week. Big week. Got a big week. Oh, first of all, I want to introduce you to our sponsor, Conk News. This is the front page of Conk right now. We will go through this in about 15 minutes again, where we'll actually talk about what's going on here. And did you see it actually updated? It updates every 3 hours. We just actually watched it, and the news changed. Yeah, that usually doesn't happen. The timing usually isn't that good, but we got it that time. 75 news sources all coming into the same place all at once. All the headlines are real. All the photos are from the articles. You can't get a better news source, period. I'm not kidding. Especially if you're a conservative news junkie, this is what you want. It's at conk.com, conk.com, okay? All right, we'll get back to that later. Want to thank them. They sponsor this fiasco. All right, so what do we got going on here? Let me tell you what we got going on here. We got big, big, big shows. Okay, tonight, Tim Conaway, presidential candidate on the no party ticket. Not no labels, no party. See, they're no labels. They don't have any labels. Tim doesn't have a party. So it's no party. Get it? Oh, wow. Yeah. Holy shit, we did that. It's like tomorrow night. Now, this is really, really cool. And we're sending out press releases to announce this. Tomorrow night, we have on our show Michael Harrison. He's the publisher of Talkers Magazine, the talk media trade publication in the United States. But he's also, more importantly, he's the executive liaison advisor to the United Nations for World Radio Day, which is tomorrow, February 13th. This is the 13th one they've done. It's the same day every year, February 13th, the day before Valentine's Day. And it celebrates radio across the world. Now, we're not exactly a radio show, or we are on Blog Talk Radio. I'll get to that in a minute. And Michael and I taped this interview this afternoon. So I know a little bit of what happened until I went unconscious. No, I was there. Yes, officer, I saw the UFO. I'm pointing to the sky. No, I was there. I knew what happened. We talked about the history of radio because the theme this year is the radio's first century. And basically, for all practical purposes, radio, depending on how you want to measure it, commercial radio across the world started between 1920 and 1924. So that was the start. We have a little bit of and I didn't bring this up during the interview, here in town in Minneapolis, KSDP AM, which is a Class 1 clear standard channel radio station. Matter of fact, I understand that we are the only city in the nation that has two clear channel radio stations. We have KSDP and WCCO, and that's because they go back forever. Well, at any rate, KSDP was founded in 1925, and it was apparently the first radio station whose business model was running advertisements. They didn't. I thought they ran the first radio advertisement. They didn't. But their business model. It's kind of hard to explain. But most radio stations were attached to other businesses and ran as promotions. KSTV was the first self-standing radio station, apparently in the world, that actually was, you know, was a for-profit entity. It actually ran to make money for itself. So we got that going on here. And now now they just run ESPN programming. So, Michael and I talk about that, about the fact that, you know, the future of AM radio is a little sketchy. But as he said, it's still a extremely valuable resource. They've been trying to pull it out of cars, and Congress is trying to pass a law. I don't think they've actually passed it yet. I don't know if they're even going to. They're trying to pass a law forcing car makers to put AM radios in their dashboards. And mostly because the rationale is because AM radio still to this day is used primarily for emergency services. If, you know, there's a weather problem, or, you know, there's any sort of emergency, you know, like the emergency broadcast system, that runs off AM radio. And that's Congress's justification for doing it. I'm kind of wary about Congress trying to force the hand of technology. But you know, that said, I mean, it's a good thing. And Michael brings up some really good justification keeping in the dashboards. Anyway, so that's coming up tomorrow. So we're really lucky. I mean, we got the guy running this for the United Nations on our show. Do you believe it? Like, big time shit. How did that happen? You know, I don't know. I have no idea. All right. Wednesday, it's Valentine's Day. Jeff Meyer is coming on. It's a scheduled, you know, he comes on once a month. It's a scheduled day. Actually, it isn't. Last Wednesday was a scheduled day, but I had to cancel the show very suddenly. So he's coming on tomorrow. The following Wednesday, which is the 14th, which is Valentine's Day. But here's the real kicker. Before Jeff comes on, Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, is going to be here. Yeah, Tucker Carlson has nothing on us. He can go off and, you know, he goes there and talks to her. No, we're going to talk to Vlad on the phone. And what is Vlad calling about? Valentine's Day. He's going to talk about love. Got that? Yeah, he's going to ride around without a shirt on. He's going to talk about love. That's what's going to happen. That's what's happening on Wednesday. Okay? And Thursday, Nathan Wooster from the Epoch Times. We've had Nathan on several times here. He's both a political and environmental reporter for the Epoch Times out of New York City. He's going to be joining us. Next Monday, Larry Newman, our good friend Larry Newman, bail bondsman from Missouri and official Bigfoot investigator for the Bigfoot Field Research Organization. He's going to be joining us, partly because two Mondays from today, we are scheduled our second month in review panel, and Larry's normally part of that panel, but he can't make it that Monday. So I told him, why don't you come on? We'll just, yeah, let's do that. Okay, so that's our schedule for the next week. So we got a lot of jam-packed stuff. How can you not? What are you going to watch, Kim Iverson on Rumble? No, you're not going to do that. It's like, Jesus, you don't want to do that. Okay, so there's several different ways you can call into the show. First of all, we are, well, once again, according to Talkers Magazine, Michael Harrison's publication, we are the first television show in America, the first talk show to take video phone calls. You want to call up with your camera? You go to jimatnight.com/call. It's on the bottom of the screen here, right there. You go to that URL, press the big blue button. You're in the queue. It's simple. You can do it. I ask everybody who calls up with their camera, and everyone says it's easier than making a FaceTime call. No lie. You can do this. All right, but we got something new as of like 2 weeks ago now, and I'm still announcing this as new. Now you can call in with your phone. You can dial in with your phone. The number is 563-999-3435. That's on the bottom of the screen here too. Got that? So you know, you don't have to bother. That's uber simple. You just dial and you're on. Obviously, we're not going to see your face. And I actually think that's part of the problem, because we haven't had a lot of people call up with a camera, and I think it's because people don't want their face on the screen. So now you can call in with your phone, and you don't have to worry about it. And finally, you can also text us real-time on the air at 408-458-5088. Now, we've had this number since the beginning. This is our 83rd show. We've been on 6 months and 1 week. So what's that? That's probably 27 weeks. Yeah. And we've had that number since the beginning. But now, as of about 2 weeks ago, roughly the first of the year, which is like 6 weeks ago. Holy shit. Man, I'm going to be dead someday. Do you believe it? I don't. Now I'm monitoring these texted messages in real time. I got a monitor over here that has way too much crap on it. I think I need another monitor still. I think I'm going to pop for that. But anyway, yeah, we are getting the text messages now in real time. And I will read them if you send them on the air, and don't try to disrupt me too much. Now, Tim Conaway is our guest. He's live tonight. You know, it's amazing. Lately, I've had no problem getting guests coming on live. I mean, when we started this, it was a little bit of an issue. I think since we've started 6 months ago, about a half the guests have pre-taped. I give all the guests the opportunity to pre-tape in the afternoon, because 11:30 p.m. on the East Coast is pretty damn late for a lot of people. So I do whatever they want. I make it easy for them. And actually, now I made an exception here. Michael, like I said, Michael's interview for World Radio Day, we taped this afternoon. It's the first one we've ever taped before the day we ran it. And I made an exception for that because he's a very, very busy man. I actually got to admit, I'm astonished with all the stuff he has going on, that he agreed to do it. I mean, he's going to be very, very busy tomorrow. And he was very, very busy today probably too. He is the point man for the entire United Nations on this, worldwide. So we taped his interview today, and we're going to run it tomorrow. First time we've ever done that. But why am I talking about that? Who knows? You know, who knows what I'm talking about? So anyway, like I said, Kansas City won. Everyone was mad at Tony Romo for apparently ruining a romantic moment. I don't think so. I don't think so. But all right. So on the commercials, first of all, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking about this. They're commercials. You know, this is my constant bitch. There's a whole bunch of shit that the cable and broadcast news industry talks about that isn't news. And frankly, it's because they have to fill time. I'm watching the Today Show this morning. What the hell? I mean, what a freaking mess. I mean, and the only reason I'm watching this for professional interest, I would not watch this in and of myself, my own personal interest ever. It's just bullshit. But the thing is, you know, no one's much different. And all right, so here's the difference between all these broadcast outlets. Frankly, it's the personalities of the people are on screen. That's the primary difference. At the top of the show, the very first thing you see when we run the introduction is a quote of mine that I'm relatively famous for news is a commodity. And it is. It's all the same. It's like you turn into, you know, okay, so you not only got the three broadcast networks, NBC, ABC, CBS, then you got Fox News, a giant juggernaut, and you know, you can add Newsmax and MSNBC. Oh, we can't forget MSNBC. That's Morning Joe. Jeff Meyer watches that. We'll have to ask him about it tomorrow on Wednesday night. Because, yeah, he says he watches it for the comedy. Yeah. Oh, my God. They're married. What the hell happened? I mean, Jeff Meyer sold his soul to the corporation. Well, I don't blame them. They're probably each getting paid, I'm guessing, roughly $5 million a year. Their household is taking home $10 million. You'd lie through your teeth for $10 million, too. And, you know, it's really true. I couldn't do it. You know, so I'm sitting here. You know, 97 people are watching this on Rumble, you know. Okay, you know, so it's not 100, you know, what about 300,000 people are watching Morning Show. But, and I've said this before, I don't necessarily, I used to think very badly of these people got on there who are lying through their teeth solely to make a buck. But, you know, as you get older, and I've been very upfront about this, I've never had children. I'm 68 years old and never had any kids. I won't go into the reasons why, but that's the way it was. If you have children and you have a family support, at this point, I'm not going to hold anything against you to support your family and to make a living. And the example I've always used on that is on MSNBC, Nicole Wallace, does she do 1 or 2 hours in the afternoon? I've been told by people who know about the situation that she's completely lying through her teeth. It's simply performance act. She doesn't believe a single thing she says. I've been told that. I don't know if that's true, but like I said, this is what I've heard. But I used to say, well, that's evil. But now I just like, well, no, she has kids, you know. She has little kids, as a matter of fact, if I'm right. You know, it's like, you know, God, feed your family, man. You got to take care of your family. And this is where the ambiguity of the gray, the non-black and white issue of adult life comes into play, you know. So she's lying to 200,000 people every day. But, you know, her job is to take care of her family, her and her husband, you know. So at this point, I can't really hold that against people. And even, you know, both Mika and Shaw have kids from previous marriages, and that's another story right there. I think their kids are largely grown now, I think. But still, you know, it's like you get, I don't know. But I couldn't do it. I'll tell you that. I couldn't. Jim, $5 million to be on MSNBC and pretend I'm a liberal. No. And the thing is, I used to be a liberal. That's the real amazing thing. I can't simply go on the inner tube here and tell you and lie through my teeth for bucks. I just can't do it. And that probably doesn't bode very well for me. I don't know. We'll see. But at any rate, why did I bring that up? Oh, because I was talking about the commercials and that's not news. But I'll tell you, there's one thing that I do want to talk about regarding this. Pfizer ran an ad. They ran a funny ad. The Pfizer drug company, they ran a funny ad. I'm thinking that I'm watching this. I'm thinking, you know, if a drug company has to run a humorous advertisement, something's wrong, you know? I mean, they're drugs. It's not a funny deal. It isn't. You know, I don't mind it's an informational ad, and we see so many of them. There's so many, like Sky Rizzi and Jardians, they're running all these stupid ads on television. But I assume they're running them because they work. They run them over and over again. So they must have some efficacy, you know, they must. But if Pfizer decides they have to run comedy to sell drugs, oh, Jesus Christ. And the thing is, it's starting to look like 1984. It's really Brave New World shit. I mean, it's like, do you have to propagandize me that much to convince me that the vaccines work? I don't know. I saw my doctor last month. I had heart surgery in January of 21. Well before I started the show, although I was doing radio shows and podcasts for Kong News at that time, which is our sponsor. And yeah, I'm very glad they're sponsoring here. But I was the editor-in-chief there for 3 years. And I think over the course of 3 years, I hosted about 400 podcasts and radio shows. So like basically came out to twice a week, roughly twice a week. Excuse me. So I saw my doctor and... Yeah, Jim. What was the point of that? Oh, Jesus Christ. My God. Why do you people watch this? I am. Oh, boy. Okay, so what was I trying to get to there? So, oh, yeah, okay, I remember now. So I saw my doctor. And I think I mentioned this a couple of years ago. So in 21, early 21, I got the two Moderna vaccine shots. I got them. Okay, fine. I'm vaccinated. That's great. I thought this is terrific. I actually, at that time, there's no way he could know, but people forget this. We had those vaccines because of what Trump did. It was Operation Warp Speed. It was basically the medical equivalent of landing somebody on the moon. That we got a vaccine that quickly for something. So in like February 21, I got the shots. About 5 months later, they say, well, now you need a booster. And I'm thinking, okay, now I'm 68 years old. I still remember when they were doing smallpox vaccines down at the St. James Hotel in Red Wing, Minnesota. I still remember this. I was like 5 or 6, but I still remember it. I've been getting shots for a long, long time. I've never had to have more than 2 shots a year for a vaccine ever, ever. In 68 freaking years, I never had to do it more than twice. And so I see my doctor. Around late summer, 21. And I'm saying, Laura, what's the deal with this? It's like, why do I need a booster shot? I've already got the 2 shots. Why do I need a booster shot? And she says to me very famously, because I will never forget this. She said, well, you know, Jim, I got to be honest with you. She's talking about the medical profession. We're wondering the same thing. And I thought, well, shit, if they don't know, if she doesn't know, highly qualified doctor, basically saved my life with this heart surgery. And if she doesn't know, well, fuck it. What the hell's going on here? So now it turns out, you know, fast forward 3 years, this is just before Christmas, if I'm right, around November, December, you know, just about, a couple months ago. The Cleveland Clinic, like one of the premier research medical organizations in the United States, they do a huge, huge study, and they determine that people who got the booster shots were more likely to get COVID than people who didn't. Which means the only conclusion you can draw that, I know there's a lot of people who will tell you the booster shots are dangerous. And I know that, you know, I'm not willing to go there because I haven't seen enough evidence, but there's a lot of evidence to indicate that. I haven't seen enough to say it's definitive yet. But the Cleveland Clinic, according to their statistical data, those boosters are useless. At the very least, they're useless. What is the point? Why are we putting this shit in our bodies if it doesn't do anything? You know, at the very least. So Pfizer's on the Super Bowl, ha, 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 funny, 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 funny. And I'm thinking, well, all I can see is George Orwell. That's all I can see. Okay, so I tell you what. I had more stuff to talk about, but Tim Conaway's here. But before I put him on, we go back to the Conk News, and this is, we got a problem. We got a little bug here. Shit. Right, hold on just a second. All right. I think that fixes it. Yes, it does. All right. This is the front page of Conk News as of, it's current. And when I showed it to you at the top of the show, it actually updated in front of our eyes. And it does that every 3 hours. So it changes 8 times in a 24-hour period. And usually most of the news, especially the news at the top, is usually different. You can go on this Conk News at 10 a.m. on a weekday and read some news and come back at 2 o'clock, and most of it will be different. Not all of it, but most of it. So there's 75 news organizations that Conk News gets news from. They don't change any of the headlines. The pictures, the photos, like the photos you see, and I keep forgetting you can't see my cursor, but the photos you see on this front page right now are from the articles that they link to. And these headlines link directly to those articles. There's no interstitial pages, no advertising page, none of that bullshit. They go directly to it, which is the reason the news organizations love Conk News, because it's a straight link to their article. And as you notice below the pictures, and occasionally there isn't a photo, but there's a small summary of what the article is about. And it's an encouragement for you to click through. But if you want to link to news, you can't find a better source. I'm serious. I hope you understand this. You can't find a better source. So that's at CONK.com, Conk News. Check that out. And we're going to, I'm going to place the 12-second bumper here, and then Tim Conaway will magically appear. Here we go. Hey, Tim, I'm looking at you.
I'm looking right back at you, Tim.
Yeah, you are. You are. And,
you know, I'm glad to hear your, you know, doctor checkup is going okay.
Say again, what?
I'm glad to hear your doctor checkup is going okay.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. They are. Yeah, I got a whole bunch of tests. You know, February every year, I go in for a battery of tests. So I got a pig's valve in my blood, in my heart. So pump, 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 pump.
I scheduled my annual visit. I don't like to go to doctors because, well, you know, they're the people who tell you got something wrong. So.
Yeah, I got. I know, a lot of guys don't like it. I know. I don't mind it. I don't. I mean. I got good doctors. I lucked out on that. You know, they're not all good. You know, hey, what's new with you?
Oh well, just hanging in there, trying to get my Conaway for Prez website cranked up and running to the specs that I'm looking for. But being a techno philistine or Luddite or troglodyte or one of those diets, I'm, you know, not going too well, but it's still up there, conawayforprez.com, C-O-N-A-W-A-Y, numeral 4, P-R-E-Z.com, and you can tap into my, on the left side of the screen, there's a list of topics that I'm talking about, and I've got
I haven't watched a lot of those videos, not a lot of them, but you have put up quite a few. I've noticed.
Yeah, and, you know, it's also on YouTube, Conaway for Prez, if you look that up, that same thing, and you get to see some of those videos. So.
Yeah, Tim, I'm going to stop you for just a second. I just want to remind everybody, if you want to call in or text in, you can text questions to Tim, or you can call in. Either right now, I would prefer if you called in on the phone. That's 563-999-3435. But, you know, if you have to put your face on the screen, we'll manage it. So, yeah, so, you know, please feel free to do that. Anyway, so one thing I didn't get to on my rundown, which I'm going to run by you. So I know if you notice this, you know, RFK, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. ran this commercial during the Super Bowl. Now,
it was such a peach of a 1960s style.
Yeah.
Campaign commercial.
Well, I'm old enough. I, you know, you and I are about the same age. I don't know you. I actually remember when John F. Kennedy ran that commercial in 1960. I mean, I was 5 years old, but I do remember it. You know,
yeah.
They did a masterful job rejiggering it and sticking RFK in there. I thought they did. So it was, it apparently had a huge impact. The searches for his campaign on Google went through the roof, and people it's kind of charming in its own way, and they stuck in the retro and they stuck him in, but his, you know, he ended up apologizing to his family because apparently a lot of his family thought it was disrespectful. I don't know, it's been 60 years. I mean, too soon.
Yeah, yeah. And it's in the family, you know, that's the thing. People like us might remember the deal, but I think he's got the right to use it. So if somebody else had done a takeoff on that would have been wrong. But no, I thought it was very clever. You know, what I heard, and I heard this on TMZ, and those guys never get it wrong.
No, never.
A 30-second spot on the Super Bowl was $7 million.
Yeah, that's correct, right.
So, but I thought it was $7 million well spent to, you know, get the recognition, get it going. So, yeah, I like it, and I got no problems with, you know, any kind of disrespect. He would be a strong candidate, stronger than DeSantis or anybody else the Republicans were putting up on stage for those mock debate things, those comedies that they ran there for a while. But, you know, he's not going to get the attention from them. So, you know, we'll see how all this pans out later in the year. Of course, it's, you know, kind of too late these days when somebody comes on, somebody gets nominated in July or August, and the rest, other members of the party then, you know, are kind of stuck.
Hey, I got to ask you, I got a lot of my liberal friends. I don't like to talk to them about with politics too much, because they know I do this, and they think I'm an evil conspiracy theorist. But speaking of that, a lot of them don't like Robert F. Kennedy because they think he's a conspiracy theorist because of the vaccine stuff. I mean, I don't know.
Well, you know, it's, these days, you know, when I was working on magazines, and we had a lot of writers doing really serious journalism, and they would we also had a lot of conspiracy theorists, you know, like full-time conspiracy, this is their life, approach us about stories and stuff. So I've seen some far out stuff and some unsubstantiated stuff, but there are so many things going on today in the rotten world of politics and the rotten world of where business and politics cross, you know, that evil intersection, that I think these aren't conspiracy theories. I think there's more to it, you know, there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah,
that's why you get that blowback.
I'm going to talk you up here. Because, I mean, the conversation starter with you is that you're the editor of Hustler magazine, but the reality is you edited over a dozen popular magazines in the American zeitgeist over the, like, 30, 40 years. I mean, you've been around. You've been, and I actually have a question about that. So we were talking about that ad, that retro RFK ad, you know, repurposing the JFK ad. So, okay, you're spending $7 million to show something for 30 seconds, what happens if it sucks?
Well, I mean, if it sucks, it's your fault. You know, these ads, they didn't just do them the day of the Super Bowl, you know, just because they were new on that day. There's a lot of time and effort that goes into that. So if your ad sucks, you know, you didn't do the right job. You didn't have the right people, so there's no excuse for it sucking, and if it does suck, you know, you're a loser. So spend the $7 million, next $7 million on something worthwhile. Donate it to the Lions Clubs or the Rotary or Kiwanis or something.
I don't know if you heard this at the top of the show, but I'm having Michael Harrison on for World Radio Day tomorrow.
Yeah, I've been watching the show.
And somebody calculated that with $7 million you could buy, yeah, like unbelievable amounts of radio advertising.
Oh yeah, I think you could buy, you know, a day's worth of 60-second spots on every radio station.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. That's true, right? You could, yeah, you could just saturate the country. So it depends on how you want to use it. But the reason, you know, I mean, your point is well taken, but the thing is, people do produce a lot of sucky advertisements. I mean, I don't understand how you're spending $7 million. You think you get a lot of talented people in a room and pound something out, but it doesn't happen a lot of times.
$7 million is just for the time. I mean, you know, you're looking at, depending on the ad, some of those ads, you know, I was looking at the cost of doing the ad was around $5 to $6 million. There's more money per minute spent making an ad, or at least for a major company, than there is spent per minute making a great movie or a great TV show.
Yeah.
And some of it is, you know, you've got your marketing analysts who are a pain in the ass, but they're telling you who your market is and what color you should have and all this other kind of stuff. You've got creative people who would just like to go wild with the thing and, you know, usually have to be reined in. And then the people who are paying for this, you know, as I've said before on your show and say all the time, the people in charge of most major companies are bean counters.
Are what?
Bean counters.
Yeah.
They're accountants. And they have no clue. So, you know, they show it to their wife or whatever, see if she likes it. So, there are a lot of ads. And, you know, some companies like Geico and Progressive do a constant stream of ads, and they have two or three different angles that they're running, and they're turning them over. I mean, you see them until you're sick of them, and then they turn them over. You know, you get something new out of the mix. But other companies, man, they bang out one 60-second ad, and they pay for it to run once or twice at 60, and then they cut it back to 30, and you see that, you know, for about 6 months. And, you know, at some point, I think they make people more angry than they make them inspired to buy.
Well, I was talking about that at the top of the show, this thing with Pfizer. So Pfizer runs, I mean, did you see this, or am I?
I saw every ad during the Super Bowl. I was pinned down by a cat and taking a nap on my lap. And, you know, when you have cat on lap,
you can't move.
COL, you're just stuck here.
Yeah, but you got a drug company running comedy, and I'm just thinking, well, bring on George Orwell. I mean, shit, the hell?
You know, Pfizer, and I'm thinking, man, you know, they're trying to get in our heads. And you talked about the other ad, the informative ad they run for, you know, Quirvorxic and all these other things. It's got to have a Q or a V or a Z or a Y. And, you know, if you can get all of them in there, you can. You know.
Yeah, you're right.
Very few of these ads are a cure for anything.
Are what?
Very few of these drugs are a cure for anything. They're something that treats the symptoms. And, you know, once you hook up to it, you've got a lifetime of using this stuff, or it's all going to swing back on you and, you know, knock you on your ass. So, I think the drug companies spend more time, and their ads are anywhere from a minute to 2 minutes long.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So they're shelling out the money, but they're making billions off of selling these, basically aspirin for, you know, some form of aspirin for what ails you. Just,
yeah, and there's you're right.
Not everything get better.
There's no incentive to cure anything. Why would you do that? It's like, no, you want to treat it, you know?
It's the same way with politics. I mean, there's no incentive to solve a problem. Because then, you know, who's going to need politics? You know, politicians, who's going to need the government if they actually fix all the stuff that they're supposed to be taken care of? They wouldn't have to be there around the clock, although they say they're not around the clock. And poor, I saw this thing recently. Some of these poor Congress people have to sleep in their offices, man. You know, because they can't afford an apartment in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, right.
On their measly $174,000 a year salary.
Cynicism.
And that really pissed me off because the Congress people passed a bill last year sometime where They can claim all these expenses while they're there, including their rent, meals.
I didn't know that. They can claim their rent as an expense, huh?
Yeah, they can claim all this. They don't even have to turn in receipts, and they can get up to. I shouldn't say a number because I forget exactly what it was, but it was a large five-figure number.
Uh-huh.
That at least that they could claim on this stuff. Give me a break. You can find a place. Of course, the people who work in Washington, D.C. on minimum wage, they can find a place. And, you know, the staff members who may, I don't know what it is these days, but a few years ago I looked it up, and the lowest paid staff member in Congress was getting $35,000 a year. I'm sure that's up from there. But some of those people make over $100,000 a year.
Yes.
It's just the hypocrisy and the duplicity of and the corruption of the whole thing is, well, we need to get paid more money because we have to sleep in our office. And the first thing they do when they get elected, they come into their office and they order new desks and new chairs and new cabinets and new, you know, it all goes, it doesn't come out of their salary.
Yeah.
For any of that kind of stuff. So they can order a nice, you know, pull-out sofa. They can order a sleep-matic, Kemper Fugit.
So, Tim, what do you think? Were you just shocked by the revelation that maybe Joe Biden's mentally impaired? Was that just shocking to you?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's for anybody who hasn't been paying attention at all. Anybody who's, you know, not looked at one of his speeches in the past 2 years, that was real shocking news. And all these people, oh, are so upset. And it's like, well, it's the truth. You know, the old guy can't even read the speeches right anymore on these big teleprompters. And I would like to see from his angle, because I bet, you know, the typeface is like, you know, this big in there. And it use small words, and then he just gets lost on the thing. And this guy's talking about a few years ago when he went home in 2017, took all this stuff with him. He didn't have the mental capacity to realize what he was doing.
Yeah.
So you know, we've had a few years for everything to degrade since then.
The fact that it's kind of, you know, I heard some analysts say that maybe it might have been actually better if they would just had charged him, indicted him, because the charge itself might have been actually been worse or better for his political ambitions than being declared essentially incompetent, you know?
And, you know, that, well, it's, you know, too late in the game to fool with it now, but you know, they can't really get rid of him because the Section 4 of the 25th Amendment requires that the vice president and several members of the executive cabinet level put together a proposal. You know, they go to Congress and say they've got this thing that they've all signed that says we think this person isn't competent, you know, to handle the job anymore. And then Congress can tell the president, you've got to go home. And 4 days later, the president can come back and say, there's nothing wrong with me. I'm not going to leave. Then Congress has to vote, and I can't recall off the top of my head if it's a simple majority or more than that, but both houses of Congress have to vote then to say, no, you're done, get out of here. So that whole process, you're never going to have somebody like Kamala and a bunch of these little wieners that are appointed to these offices say, this guy can't do it anymore. They're all in the party. And if they did that, the embarrassment to the party would be such that none of these people would get anything. They wouldn't even get the private sector jobs that these people land in after they get out of office.
But Tim, have you noticed now in the last couple of days the spin they're trying to put on this? I just find, I mean, it's gotten to comical levels. People are going on Face the Nation and the Sunday talk shows, and they're saying, oh, there's nothing wrong with him. He's sharp as a tack. But the thing is, we've all seen it. That's the thing. Yeah. It's like, how can you argue against this? I mean, they're looking like doofuses.
Yeah, they should have just shined on, said, well, you know, it was unfortunate he said that, and that, and just left it alone. But they can't, you know, that, and that's the problem with these people. They're not very smart.
No, they aren't.
Good at what they do. They, you know, they, it's in, they're in the party. And it's always been this way. You know, you asked me, we were talking offline about, you know, what I wanted to talk about. And I told you this, you know, I try to stay on top of stuff, but it's just the same old shit. And I've been reading newspapers critically since I was 4 years old.
Uh-huh.
My dad, when Nixon gave his famous Checkers speech and obfuscated to that, to the whole thing, never dealt with any of the
I got to tell you, that's impressive. I mean, I know you're only a few years older than me, but if you remember the Checkers speech, man, I mean, that's before my time. I don't even, well, as a little kid, remember it.
My dad had me, you know, read the first few paragraphs and then tell him what it meant. And so I read it, and I told him, you know, what it said. And he said, okay. And he pointed to the paper there in between the lines and said, what do you see here? And I said, well, it's white. And he said, you have to learn to read between the lines because that's where the truth is. So from that point on, whether it was a good thing or not, I've been a critical reader of any nonfiction type work. And, you know, and it's, when I was in the newspaper, the magazine business, you know, it stood me well to look at that stuff because I'm always questioning everything that I read, no matter where I read it from, even the trusted sources. I'm always reading between the lines and seeing what's there. But for 68 years, it's the same hypocrisy and duplicity. It's self-serving, self-enriching, bold-faced lies. I mean, it hasn't changed. There's more of it now.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you, Tim. Has it gotten worse, though?
Yeah, it's gotten, the way it's gotten worse is that we're now expected to believe it. Because they tell us that isn't so, just like with this Joe.
That's well put.
Mind game.
Yeah.
That, you know, well, we're going to, you know, if we tell you that it's okay, you can believe it. And it's like, at this point, man, if you tell me something, I immediately don't believe it.
Yeah, the same thing with me. You're absolutely right. If you tell me something now, I think the opposite's true. Right.
Yeah. And if I look at something that's interesting and it's talking about this study or that study, I go find the study if I can, and I read the study because I want to know for myself what's there. Every journalistic, so-called journalistic outlet takes a side. And there, you know, it's what's not reported is as important as what is reported. And, you know, there are some sites that try to do a really good job of it, but they start out from a certain standpoint. And it's been like that since the beginning of America. The first newspapers after the Revolution and after America became its own nation took sides, and they did a, you know, they were like, it was like a virtual knockdown, drag out fight between newspapers on stuff. It wasn't really until toward the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century, that there was any attempt to be, you know, moderate or take a balanced approach on anything. But, you know, I worked for a newspaper. I knew what their attitude was and who the sacred cows were and all that kind of stuff. And I see it all the time. So so that's, you know, the problem. You see all these news things and all these people all making a big deal out of this and that. And it's like, man, this has happened so many times in the past, but nobody bothers to educate themselves.
I have to ask you this. Because you're a guy who would know. So there's kind of sort of this impression. Now, you know, you're talking about going back to the Revolution. newspapers have always been slanted in certain political directions, and usually they don't try to hide it. You know, we're either a liberal paper or a conservative paper. There's kind of this, and I'm asking, my question is this a myth that there's a feeling that between roughly the end of the Second World War, about 45, to maybe up to Watergate or 1980 or 85, that 30, 40 year period where there was kind of, it was kind of considered the golden age of journalism, and journalism was, if not impartial, more impartial. But is that true, or is that just the are we looking at it from rose-colored lenses from the, you know, to the past?
You know, it's the papers, you know, they had it before the war, they had it after the war. They might have tempered some of it a little bit because of, you know, all the patriotic outpouring, you know, that we had at the time. Our country had been victorious in this war, and, you know, this, what a great nation we are, and all that kind of stuff. So they might have tempered it a little bit. I think during that period of time, newspapers were, I'm not talking politically, but they were more conservative in their reporting about things. Sensational crime is one thing, but the ordinary things that went on in life, domestic abuse and child abuse and, you know, some of the low-level crimes, drug use, for example, weren't even covered in the papers. So, you know, if not for a family newspaper. And I think maybe that's where this attitude came from. There was this idea of the family newspaper instead of just a newspaper that, you know, reported whatever whatever was newsworthy. So, and locally, you know, most newspapers cover a local area. We hear about the New York Times and the Washington this and the LA Times, but newspapers, the heart and soul of newspapers is the local coverage. And in the local coverage, they were always pretty open about which side of the road they were on.
You know, it's funny. I just read this afternoon. So apparently, as an experiment, and the Philadelphia Inquirer newspaper, they didn't do this themselves. A bunch of researchers did it, but they volunteered their services. They sent out 2,400 postcards to people in the Philadelphia area that they knew were not subscribers of the Inquirer, and offered them a free lifetime subscription. No questions asked, no strings. Only 42 people out of those 2,400 people actually took them up on it. It's like, and this has been my contention, that people, for some reason, people are no longer interested in local news. I don't really know why.
Yeah. Well, and again, Philadelphia, you know, that's a big paper in a big city.
Yeah.
A lot of people just don't want the paper. They don't have time. And, you know, that's one of the problems. That's why people, you know, read the newspaper on their phone. It's like, oh, what? And that's fine. They read it on the phone or on their tablet or whatever. But a lot of people don't have time for the newspaper. And the little 60 and 90 second news clips that you get on TV are straining people's attention spans, I think. I think a lot of people don't really care about what is promoted as the news. And again, maybe because they just hear the same thing over and over again. There was something I read or saw the other day, and it reminded me of the April floods.
Of what? I'm sorry?
The April floods in eastern Kentucky. Every year, somewhere around April, it would rain a lot, and the creeks would rise, and the rivers would rise, and the people who had built in the floodplains would get flooded, and we would do the story about, you know, the flooding and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, the first year I was there, I was thinking, oh, this is news, man, let's break the And then the second year I was here, it was like the same thing. And I said, why don't we just pull out the articles we wrote last year? Because it's the same damn thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's when I see these recurring storylines, I just think, oh, the April floods come again. You know, there isn't much new. And as you say, the 24/7 news cycle, the news outlets don't have enough people, or they don't have the right setup to cover all the news that could be happening in 27 or in 24 hours or 7 days a week. One story and they beat it to death. And a lot of times there isn't a story. So, you know, that's why, oh gosh, Joe Biden, this guy said something bad about Joe Biden's mind. Well, he's not the first. And just, he put it in an official document. That's a first. But it, you know, it's a 1 day news story and it's not even a full day's worth of news. So, you know, let's move on to something else.
It's unbelievable. You know, so like I was talking about earlier, the Today Show is on television 7 days a week. Well, not on Sundays. It is on, but only for 2 hours. But they fill 4 hours a day, you know. And like, and also, like you said, half of that news is superfluous bullshit. And they probably could come up with stuff that was actually meaningful. But then again, I mean, there is stuff, you know, broadcasting here myself. I'm lucky I don't have to do this, because in the sense of the Today Show, it's kind of like old radio, and that is people do not watch it from beginning to end. You know, they tune in while and tune out while it's going on. So you do, there's a, some sort of repetition is kind of necessary, but still, I don't know, man. It's like you're going to talk about Taylor Swift for 20 minutes. I mean, Jesus Christ, give it up.
Yeah, I kept, you know, saying, oh, that's about the sixth time they've shown her tonight. My wife says, I don't know why you hate that movie. But, I told her. But, yeah, it's, well, the, you know, they could do it right, but there are rooms where people sit and write the news, and they're getting the news from other places. They're calling people. I don't even know if they call people anymore, but... instead of being out in the world, BBC News does a pretty good job of this. They have people out in the world, and it seems to me like they give those people the video camera, and they say, you know, you shoot and talk at the same time. We don't need to see your head between, you know, the camera and the news, and show us some actual footage. So if they did that, if they had people out, you know, doing things, they could get a lot of news. It's easier now than ever before to send that news into the central station, and you need a few people there to, you know, collate it and put it back out. Hal Schottelkotty on Channel 9 in Cincinnati, this is again back in the 60s and 70s, Hal Schottelkotty with the news. And Hal Schottelkotty would have like a 10-minute segment where it was an automobile accident on US 52, and it was a fire over here. But it was actual news, actual footage, and there was no reporter doing it. They sent cameramen out, and they were driving around, and they had police radios. And so, you know, if there was a fire or an accident, you know, whatever, a big brawl and stuff like, I mean, Al had it and bang, 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 bang. You got all this kind of stuff in 10 minutes that some, you know, some news channels would take one of those stories and run it for 3 days, you know, trying to
stretch it out. That's right.
So Al had the right idea all those years ago, and, you know, it could be done. But again, the people at the top of the networks, the people at the top of the cable news channels are bean counters. They do not know anything about news or where it's at or how to do it.
Well, some of the stuff's now been forced, the hand has been forced simply by economics, because if you got some stupid guy doing a stand-up in front of a fire, it takes him and the cameraman, that's two people. But you're right. If you just send the cameraman out and let him talk and give him a, you know, a headset,
yeah,
you're saving the expense of one person. And so more and more of that stuff's happening, you know. And my beef, based on what you're talking about, this guy in Cincinnati, and that is, all right, maybe I should know if there's a fire down the street or if somebody got killed, you know, a couple miles away, shot or something like that. Maybe, but you don't need to dwell on it for 7 minutes.
Exactly.
You know.
Exactly. And this is news. This is something that's happening. It's happening here. It's happening there. If it's close to you, you don't know about it. Big deal. Like you say, it's, you know, in 15 seconds, it's 20 seconds, it's gone, and they're on to the next story. And that's, you know, there are so many things happening in the world that, you know, they could go there. All this Hamas, Gaza, this kind of stuff, you know, they've turned that into a long simmering soup that they dish out a little bit of every day. There's all kind of news there. And they sit and they accept everything that these Hamas leaders say to them without questioning them, without, you know, pushing the issue. And they let these guys sit there and say, well, the U.S. Supplied stuff to Israel that is killing civilians. These guys hide behind civilians. They kidnap and rape civilians. But nobody, you know, hits them up with the end of the thing. And, you know, and then we get this, of course, Congress wants to do this thing of, oh, we got to send money, you know, to Gaza. And, okay, if we had some U.S. bureaucrats, some mid-level bureaucrats that we sent over to Gaza with money, and they were paying to do this, and they were paying to do that, that might be one thing. But we're not. We're sending it to the Gaza Reconstruction Organization or whatever this group have named themselves, and they pocket all this shit. And, you know, nothing is going to happen to any good. But $48 billion, hey, we've got it. You know, we've got it to give away. You know, meanwhile, there's some roads.
Well, yeah. Isn't it? I mean, how can the government say, oh, we're giving money for humanitarian aid? They don't know. They know it's not going to be used for humanitarian aid.
Well, yeah, they know, and that's all because they're buying this guy and buying that guy and buying the other guy. You know, that's why the people in Congress or some people in the office of the president think, oh, yeah, I get my cut. You know, yeah, we can do this for you as long as I get my cut. And again, that's, you know, people should read history books and not the textbooks that we had in school or they have in schools now, to read actual history books about political organizations and their various presidencies and stuff going way back. From the Civil War on, it was more so, but even before the Civil War, the politics and that led to the people getting into Washington, you know, based out of New York and Chicago and Boston. And then after the Civil War, you know, even more so, you know, read about the corruption in these offices and how it worked and the quid pro quo of the political machines. And, you know, understand what's going on. And if you know that, you look at what's happening now and you say, it's blatant. At least, you know, at those times, they tried to keep it under wraps or they tried to do it in a way where at least somebody was getting some good out of it.
Yeah.
You know, I'll take care of your problem if you take care of me. But the problem got taken care of. Now it's just like, you know, elect me. I'll get rich. Nothing good is going to happen for you or for the country. And but, you know, you can't do without us. Don't let us shut down because, you know, boy, if we stopped operating for even 10 minutes, America would be in trouble.
Well, that is,
stop operating for a couple of years and let's see how much we miss you.
That is one thing about technology. And that is, like, for example, people are talking about the president's mental capacity, we can actually see it. 150 years ago, you just read about it in a newspaper, and who knows if anyone was telling the truth or not. You know, yeah. I mean, you know, now it's, matter of fact, I was going to ask you about this. So one of the things that's gotten more blatant in the last few years, apparently, especially to me, is that it's not just that politicians lie. They've always lied. Now the hypocrisy is kind of getting closer. The lies are getting closer and closer together. Do you know what I mean? I mean, there used to be, there's kind of a thing where, okay, we would lie about some big thing and then we kind of let it go for a little while, wait for people to forget, and then we go lie again. Now it's like, you know, now they're lying every 3 days. And after a while, it's like you have to be kind of an idiot not to pick up. I mean, you know?
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was talking about earlier, is they lie to us and they expect us to believe it. And, you know, just because they're saying it to us, you know, they're the, you know, the director of fanatical indulgence or whatever their title is, you know, Secretary of the State, winking, blinking, and nod, you know, said this, so yes, or Mayorkas, you know, he's our, and it's like, if they're saying it, if they're coming out in public and saying it, that means it's a lie that they really want you to believe, because they, you know, they, and you're expected to believe because he's standing right there. And who's going to say something? Who other than Peter Ducey is going to challenge any of these guys? Ducey's wasted at the White House, because have you noticed that Biden does not ever come out for press conferences? I mean, historically, presidents have done press conferences every couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah. He's done the least in history, if I'm right.
In the face of the press, even Trump, who didn't like to, would come out and do it. But Biden, they won't let him out.
No, they don't.
In front of these people. So it's like, you know, you could send anybody, you could send your interns over there to handle that, because all you get is the whatever confused woman is in charge of the podium these days. I think it's still the same one. But, you know, that there are very few journalists who will challenge anybody. And no, and people are allowed to make these speeches, and then they don't go challenge. And then they say, well, I don't have, you know, I'm not taking any questions. Well, it doesn't work that way. You're going to get up and sound off. We're going to ask you questions. And if you don't answer them, then, you know, we're going to report.
Well, did you get the impression over the last week that this whole thing, when this thing came out with this, the HER report, and this lack of indictment, or whatever you want to call it, about the fact that a lot of people said that on a Friday night press conference, that the press has actually been, at least to a man and woman, extremely frustrated about the very fact they have not been able to ask the president questions. And it's almost like the dam burst. I don't know if you watch this in real time.
Well,
but, you know,
I didn't see it, because even worse than watching a bunch of politicians talk is watching a bunch of journalists talk about their hard lives. But I have no sympathy for them. I've done it. I know what it's like. And, you know, you chose it. If you can do a good job of it, great for you. But don't complain that the politicians aren't cooperating with you. You have to force the issue. And, you know, they can't make the president come out and talk. But this is when you start using your platform to start talking about how the president doesn't come out and talk.
Yeah.
How the president avoids the questions, and how you don't accept the answers, you know, from the appointed talking heads, the little puppets that they strut out in the press room. You know, don't complain to each other about it. Do something. You know, use. And then, of course, in order to do that, they have to, their outlet, whatever it is, would have to let them do it. But, you know, push that as well. Push it back up the line. Woodward and Bernstein, they had to push to get their reports on Nixon. And Ben Bradley was a good editor, but he set some very, I think, good standards for how they had to go about their work. You know, anything they got from Deep Throat, they had to corroborate. They couldn't just run with it.
Right.
And, you know, but they had to push, and Bradley had to push, you know, at the top. And unfortunately, the paper at that time was run by, you know, one of the family members who owned it. Most publishers come up from the advertising side of the business. And they don't want to rock any boats. And they don't care about, you know, the story and the facts and all that kind of stuff. They care about filling the newspaper with ads, and all the editorial stuff fills the space between the ads.
Yeah.
So had that been a more modern situation, that probably would never have happened. But those guys, they had the push for getting that. And these days, I think you push hard enough, you get shown the door probably. But there are so many outlets now that you don't have to, it's like, this isn't the only paper in town. There's the worldwide interweb, and if you've got credibility in journalism, you can, you know, get your space, you can get your word out. But you have to stand up and do it. You have to fight for it.
So, Tim, what's up for your campaign here in the near future?
Well, I'll get my website up. It's time to start lining up. I want to get on as many state ballots as I can. And so because I wasn't in the primaries, I didn't have to sign up. There was a deadline for getting on the primary ballots. But because I'm not affiliated with any party, the sign-ups are a little bit later. So I want to get those sign-ups going. I'm going to spread out on all kinds of social media to get more of the word out. I think there are a lot of younger people who don't vote, and they see the farce that is politics, and they see the federal government for what it is, and they don't want to participate, which is wrong. But then, you know, the reason that they give for not participating is that they don't have a choice. They don't want Trump. They don't want Biden. And I don't want Trump, and I don't want Biden. You know, people say, well, you're taking votes away from one of them. No, I'm taking votes away from both of them.
Yeah.
And I want to make that message clear that I'm not out to tip the election for somebody. I'm out to win the election for me. So that's kind of, you know, where I'm going with it. I know a lot of people in politics here and there in California and in Minnesota and other places. So, you know, starting to get some of that stuff rolling. And that'll be the next few weeks here as we get into our early spring. My wife uses voice text, and so she was voice texting to my daughter that Punxsutawney Phil had not seen his shadow. And the voice text changed it to Pakistani Phil, and then she tried it and she tried it again, and it came out Huck's attorney Phil. And so
well, you know, we should do that next year here on Jim Peters Tonight. We'll have Pakistani Phil. That'd be a cat. My cat, you know, Henry.
Call him up to the window at night and see if he sees his shadow.
Oh, man. Oh, Tim, it's always great to talk to you. Always fantastic. So now you will not be joining us next Monday or 2 weeks. No. I'm sorry. No, you are not Larry Newman. Larry Newman won't be joining us in 2 weeks. No, you will. That's right.
Yeah,
for a month in review. What am I talking about? You know,
I won't light a cigar, but I might have one to hold just.
Oh, you can light it if you want. I don't care. You know.
Well, not here.
Yeah, not in the house, right?
Yeah,
look over your shoulder. That's right. That's right. Yeah. It's always great talking to you, sir. Really.
Yeah.
And by the way, I will put on the. We haven't done it for a while. I'll put another blog post on our blog on the web on our website for link to your campaign website. So
great.
We'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. You take care. All right.
And I enjoy the show. I tune in and. I'll check you out when I'm
Oh, thank
can.
You. You like when I lose my train of thought then? Do you like that?
Yeah, that's a standard Jim Peters move.
That's right.
And everybody else is out there saying, Jim, you were talking about, you know, that engages the audience.
Yeah, of course it does. Right. You keep on talking. That's great. I appreciate it. Thanks,
all
man.
Right,
we'll
take
see you.
See you later.
Take care. I'm going to run the bumper. That's Tim Conaway. His website at conawayforprez.com. That's Conaway, numeral 4, PREZ.com. We'll put another link on our blog tomorrow to that. So you can check out what he's doing. He has a bunch of policy positions that he's recorded and uploaded as YouTube videos with links to all of them. Pretty impressive, actually. Pretty cool. So, all right. So we got a few more minutes here. This is what I call part three, or you want to call it the third block or whatever. I'd like to talk about the real science news or paranormal news or whatever you want to call it. This was last week. The Daily Star from the UK said that they did an interview with – they interviewed Google's AI chatbot called Bard. So they're interviewing the AI chatbot, right? They're not interviewing a person. They're actually interviewing the AI chatbot. And they asked the Bard chatbot about aliens. And this is the quote they got from the Google Bard chatbot. Quote, aliens might be able to bend gravity, teleport across vast distances, or even create wormholes for instantaneous travel. And it predicted an attack where entire cities could be wiped out into oblivion, or of enemy forces materialize out of thin air. And what did I tell you? I've been talking about this for a long time. At some point, the government's going to say, we need $17 trillion because the aliens are going to come and kill us. This is going to be a false flag thing. They're going to use it to raise money. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of people who think this is the reason they're sitting on this information about UFOs is specifically to set up this grift. There's a lot of people who think, I have no proof of that. I'm just telling you that's my own, and it's not even my own personal speculation, but there are people who do think that. So, yeah, but I do think that they will end up using it. They will. Okay, what else do we got? Okay, this is also the Daily Star from the UK. Conspiracy theorists think scientists accidentally transferred us into a new universe. Now, this is the way this works. If you know anything about quantum mechanics or quantum physics, right, there's a theory that there's an infinite number of universes in our same space, and every single moment of your life, you choose one of them to be in, or your personal path sends you to one of them. So they're basically alike, right? These quote-unquote universes, and you navigate through them to your satisfaction. Put that in 25 words. I know that sounds like bullshit, but that's the theory. So there's a lot of people now who are starting to think that they run the Large Hadron Collider reactor at CERN in France. It's the largest one in the world. It's a giant, giant circle. I think it's 56 miles around, if I'm right. And they send atomic particles through it and smash them into each other to see what will happen. And then they measure the results. Well, some people are thinking now that in one of those experiments, they actually triggered a thing where our universe actually changed. I have no idea. Seriously, don't look at me. I don't know if this is true or not, but that's the theory. I'm giving it to you. So that means that, and no one really can pin down when the particular experiment happened either, which one it was. It's just that one of those experiments might have done this. So, and then the final thing is we have to talk about it. We have to mention it, and that is the new Apple Vision Pro headset, and people look like dorks. That's all I'll say. You know, okay, someday they will look back at this when we can have these in glasses or even contact lenses. And I know they're already working on that. They're working on contact lenses that will project images into your eyes. So they're basically, it's the Vision Pro headset that you literally stick in your eyes. So you're not wearing a headset. And they're wired to the internet. They're already working on this. But at some point, people in the future are going to look at this, the first attempts. It's going to be like the people who are driving the first cars down muddy roads in 1903, you know. It's going to be the same type of deal. People look stupid doing this. They do. They're out there typing on virtual keyboards, you know. I mean, they've been showing on Fox News, they've been showing videos of people driving cars who are typing on virtual keyboards while they're doing this with the thing attached. Because I don't know if you got to be clear about this. It's not a typical gaming headset. You can actually see through it. So you're still looking at the real world. And then all these displays are put in front of it. So you can still see where you're at, and you can still drive a car, but you can drive a car with a iPhone interface basically stuck in your face. You know, that's basically what it is. It's crazy shit. It's what it is. And it's $3,500, so God bless you, you know. Go to town. If you can afford that, you know, you're a better man than me. That's all I can say. So tomorrow, World Radio Day. Michael Harrison's here. Wednesday, Jeff Meyer from Calling News and Vladimir Putin from Russia talking about Valentine's Day. That's on Wednesday. Thursday, Nathan Wooster, Five Times, both politics and environment. He talks about both. These guys and Jazz Shaw is the same thing going. They have two beats. You know, Jazz Shaw writes about politics and UFOs. He's become the point two guy at the whole Salem media for UFOs. And that's cool. And he knows a lot about it too. So, and same with Nathan. Nathan knows all about green energy, all about the Green New Deal, all that crap. So I'm looking forward to talking to him. He's very entertaining. You'll enjoy that. And not only that, all those people are coming on live. Well, it's Harrison, which we recorded. We recorded that this afternoon. That's tomorrow. So we're done for tonight. I want to thank Tim Conaway for joining us. Fascinating conversation as always. I'm Jim Peters. Good night, Esperanza. Good night, Uncle Donnie. And good night to you wherever you are. We'll see you tomorrow night. Take care.